Hello, you wonderful woman. Welcome to the Love is Coming podcast. I'm your host, Persia Lawson, one of the UK's most successful love coaches, according to the Times magazine, and author of the book, Love is Coming. It's my mission through this podcast to help single women, specifically female leaders, get powerful, soul-expanding relationships that revolutionize your growth, impact, and happiness during your time on planet Earth. Let's get straight to it. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I have got a disco-licious, delightful day, but already ballsed up. I was trying to be really cool there. I've been practicing it and I already ballsed it up. A disco-licious dream date? I don't know. Anyway, welcome back to the show. I'm just going to tell you who we've got. We've got the disco-licious. Fucking speak today.
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Do you know what? When I was saying it on Instagram in preparation for this, it really was rolling trippingly off the tongue. And I could go back and start again, but I'm not going to because I just said to Gemma, we're straight through crew. And so we're going to stick to doing straight through. We are speaking, I am speaking to the Disco-licious DJ. I did it. Gemma Bolt.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, babes?
I'm good. And we're wearing sequins for the occasion. Well, you were wearing sequins and then I just threw mine on because I was like, oh God, I feel undressed now.
Exactly. So, especially as you're the Disco-licious DJ, you need to be in sequins.
I know. But when I'm at home in my little, you know, office at home, I just like, you know, it's all about the sort of comfy stuff. I said to you yesterday, like sometimes I just work from my bed sometimes because I can.
Yeah, you and me both. That's my favourite office is bed. But actually sofa really now. Sofa is just the way. I kind of like don't even know why I bother having an office anymore because I'm in here so seldom. Like literally mainly just podcast episodes and the odd client I do in here. Sometimes I do clients from the sofa too because that's how we roll. Anyway, shall I introduce you? I'm going to introduce you and talk a bit about your... Okay. I love your bio. So here we go. Gemma has had quite a colourful career from her stage debut at 3 years old. That was my favourite bit.
Great. As a strawberry and vanilla ice cream. Yeah.
She has gone on to appear in movies. She's popped up in TV shows and she's dabbled in reality TV. She's a broadcaster, a podcaster, and you will hear her voice crop up all over the place as one of the UK's leading female voiceover artists. That's why when I met you, I was like, I feel I know you already. And last year, this is the really exciting bit. Last year, she saw the start of a new adventure when she launched her club brand, Disco-licious, with her friend and business partner, Denise Van Outen. Their brunches and club events are appearing all over the country and internationally with Ibiza dates over the summer too. Outside of Disco-licious, Gemma has DJed all over the world and at some of the biggest music festivals. And this summer is set to be her busiest yet. I really, really enjoyed saying that. And can I just say this is
quite the intro.
It's quite the bloody bio, babes. I loved it. And you know what? I said this to you when we were chatting yesterday. I genuinely feel like I manifested you on my podcast because the day before I met you, which was at our mutual friend Jules Cameron, the comedian, Jules Cameron, who I know has DJed at Disco-licious quite recently. So it was her birthday. And the day before, I was in my new freestanding bath in our fancy new little renovation.
Love
and we actually,
bath.
I love a freestanding bath. And I actually had a vision in a bath while we were renovating at my in-law's house that I was like, we need to get a disco ball over the bath. We just need to. And so the night before I met you, I was lying in my bath looking up at this disco ball. And a lot of like, I do a lot of my manifesting here. Like a lot of visions come to me in the bath. And then I met you on a dance floor. Like probably, I'm
love
sure
that
there was disco ball there somewhere.
That I was the disco ball, just like balled my way in.
Yes.
And it was really lovely to meet you as well, because you know a lot of mutual friends. So
exactly, we've got the lovely Lucy Keaveney, who's a fellow voiceover artist, and so it's it's interesting because I actually met my husband on the dance floor under a disco ball at a festival. So I just think...
Oh, wow. So we could get married in a few years' time.
You
then,
never
maybe.
Know, babe. You never got to know.
Okay, cool. That's good.
So I do actually think, aside from Jules, who when I interviewed her, I don't think she was a DJ, or she was just starting out DJing because she's done a lot recently. But you're the first DJ that I've had, you're the first one I've had on the show. So I'm really excited. I always like to bring on people to the show that give different perspectives
on dating and relationships? Because otherwise, I think, you know, if we just get constant like dating and relationship experts, I think that's a bit dull. I'd much rather have like a wide range, and definitely people who've lived colourful lives. And I'm pretty sure you've lived a colourful life.
It's been colourful, and I'm probably not very conventional either. So
perfect. That's
we'll
what
see how it goes.
Okay, so let's lead in with a big question straight off the bat then. So how do you think women becoming more successful and independent, which is, you know, what we're seeing more and more these days, how do you think that impacts modern, like romantic relationships in the modern day? Just an easy question to get you started.
Just an easy one, just something light to ease our way in. Well, I think that, I don't think that it's the be all and end all now for women. So women are focusing more on their careers, and they're able to focus more on their careers now because, you know, that there's so many more avenues that we can explore. And, you know, we have that freedom to work from home if we get, I mean, if you're in a job that allows you to do that. And so I think in a way it's taken away from the fact that it's grow up, find somebody, have a baby, get married. You know, we don't want to be sort of pigeonholed there now, and we can do more. And I think that that's very liberating for women.
It is. I completely agree. And I mean, how do you think, or more specifically, like what's your experience been with men and how they react to it? Because I'm very fortunate. Like my husband is like, I'd like the more successful you are, the better. Great. Like he's got no issues around that.
Thanks for those home improvements. More glitter balls in the bathroom, please.
Yeah, exactly. So he's not, I've not really had the experience where a man, not to my knowledge, has sort of been intimidated or has had a problem with it. But I've had a lot of clients and a lot of friends who have encountered like men really being triggered by their success. Like, have you had that experience?
So what I've found in my experience is that generally, when I first meet a guy, they will love the independence. They will love the fact that, you know, I'm a go-getter and I'm a grafter. But then what you tend to find happens is that the relationship goes on and all of a sudden it becomes intimidating.
Right.
And then it's incremental sort of put downs, like, well, should you really be doing that meeting? You know, you've got children to be looking after. And, you know, should you really be doing that at your age? And, you know, that's what I found. And that's actually what I really wanted to get away from because, you know, the more, it sounds really, can I swear?
Oh my God, swear away.
Yeah, sounds really wanky, but it's like the more success that you get, the more intimidated they are, but then the more that does for you and your confidence. And I think you become a lot less tolerant. And that's kind of where I got when I left the father of my children. You know, we'd been together 10 years and we had two kids together and, you know, and we had some amazing times, but it kind of got to the point where I felt like I had so much more to do. And there were so many other things that I wanted to explore. And I just thought, this is never going to happen as long as I'm with you because you will make me feel rubbish. You won't give me that boost and you won't be my champion and cheerleader. And really, I need to get away from this. And also being the mother of young daughters, I wanted to be a role model for them because these are very formative years and I never wanted to sort of look back and think, God, you know, I should have stood up for myself more. It's like, you know, probably too much the other way. In fact, like I probably stood up for myself too much and, you know, became quite confrontational. But it's tricky. It's tricky being a woman because, you know, I think you have to work twice as hard to prove yourself. And especially in an industry that I'm in now, which is, you know, predominantly male dominated.
That's why it's so interesting seeing. In fact, I want to hear a little bit because I know, look, everyone knows Denise Van Outen. If they're of my age, at least, you know, grew up with her on The Big Breakfast. How did you get into, how did Discolicious come about?
Discolicious came about.
Actually, do you want to mention what it is? Because I haven't actually explained what it is.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. So Discolicious is a club brand that I started with Denise. And it's funny because originally we'd spoken about doing a party. Both of our exes were DJs and we were learning to DJ at the time. And I guess we kind of felt a bit like, oh, are people going to laugh at us because our exes are DJs? And then we were just like, why don't we just put on a party? And we'll just put on a party and see how it goes. And before we'd even put on that party, we'd announced the name on social media and the fact that we were doing it at this venue in London. And it just went crazy. People started booking us for events before we'd even done our launch party. So they were booking us for events for later on in the year. So we'd booked in our first event for the, I think it was the 1st of July last year. Before we'd even done that launch event, we had bookings in Glasgow and Leeds for later on in the year. So we were like, okay, there's an appetite for this. And, you know, that's my world. I've got a lot of contacts in that industry. And Denise is obviously amazing and everyone knows who she is. And she's a really good DJ too. So it was kind of the perfect partnership. And yeah, here we are. Like not even a year old, really, and we've got Ibiza this year, which is really exciting.
Casual, like it's so great, and I just listen. It's no surprise. I love disco. I love music. I love festivals. I love everything about it. So I love the name. I think it's brilliant. Discolicious. What I wasn't expecting to ask you, I guess, is when you're DJing, because I feel like we're seeing more and more women DJing these, like getting really into it. Because like you said, it was like originally it was men. That's what men did. And that I didn't really know many women DJs. And now I'm just kind of meeting more and seeing more. And it's like really inspiring and I love it. Like, how does it make you feel like when you're DJing? Do you feel really powerful?
Yeah, well, first of all, when I was sort of, you know, going out and clubbing, there were a few female DJs and I really looked up to them. I mean, I've always loved dancing. I've always loved dance music in whatever form that takes, whether it was disco, techno, house, whatever. And there were some amazing female DJs that I really looked up to when I was younger, but there weren't many. I mean, there was Lottie, there was Lisa Loud, there was DJ Rap, Miss Kitten. But there wasn't loads. And I always just used to look at them and think, God, they're so cool. And I would love to do that. But two of my previous relationships ended up being with DJs. And so I always just kind of felt like, oh, I can't really do that because it would just look a bit sad or, you know, I don't know why. That was just me. And then eventually when I did start to, you know, take it more seriously, my friends were like, you should have been doing this years ago. Like, this is what you were born to do. And I love it. I love picking the music out. I love reading the room because that's the hard bit of DJing, really, is reading the room. I say to anyone, like, you know, you can teach them how to use the decks and beat match. As long as you can count, you can generally beat match unless your Grimes at Coachella and then things go wrong and people have seen that. But, you know, the lesson there is always do your own USB. But it is quite a powerful thing, like watching the room dance to the music that you're playing. Mm-hmm. But I would say the skill with being a DJ is reading the room because that is the hard bit. If no one's digging it, change it up. And I think sometimes a lot of DJs just have like, well, this is my set and this is what I'm playing. And then, you know, that doesn't really make a good DJ.
Okay, so I'm going to do a tenuous link there into dating. Because I wasn't expecting to do this. But I think that, you know, what I see so much the time when well, certainly the women I coach, they go on dates and they are, it's like being an audition. It's almost like they have rehearsed what they're going to say, what questions they're going to ask, everything. Yeah. I used to be an actor, and one of the techniques that we learned was called Meisner, where you basically just look, you sit opposite someone, and I mean, you probably know, like, and you're kind of, you're basically, the whole point is you're in the moment and you're responding authentically in the moment. And so it's actually, you know, I realized how much like spirituality is essentially involved in acting, and I never did at the time, which is annoying. But also when you're on a date, it's like, I always say keep it in the date, because what happens, I know for me, I used to like future trip and like overthink, and I just wasn't present with this human in front of me. I was thinking about what would our kids look like, or you know, all of this. I didn't even want kids, but I was thinking about that. Like, you know, what dress would I wear?
And all going to work out like.
And actually, it's like, you know, with DJing, it's so true. I've been and seen DJs play where they're so like fixated on this is what I'm doing, like it or lump it. And actually, the DJs that I think are the best are the ones who can be present in the moment and work with the energy of, you know, and that's so true with dating. But in order to do that, I think you've really got to be able to trust yourself.
Yeah. And I get, like, I mean, God, going on a date. And I only really did that for the first time when I left my long-term partner, the father of my children. Mm-hmm. And it was so daunting. It was like you say, it was like going in for an audition, mm-hmm. because you're doing it yourself to the other person. You're just looking at them and analysing them, thinking, not, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily sort of, you know, like future trip, but I would sort of look at them and think, like, am I going to get on with you? Like, it's like before I've even sort of had a deep conversation with them. And it's the weirdest thing, because it was a very new thing to me, because previous to, you know, coming out of that 10-year relationship, I'd never been on a date. I'd always just about, probably not very healthy, but from the age of 17, don't do this. But I jumped from relationship to relationship with a very teeny tiny gaps in between. I mean, I think the longest was like 3 months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then up until I was 39. So it's like, you know, that's a long time to be in relationships. And mm-hmm. I wanted to spend the first couple of years coming out of that relationship, and also because I had young children, just finding out who I was, mm-hmm. and not jumping into a relationship, because, you know, that was something I'd never done before. So I just thought it's really important to do that. And when I did start going on dates, it was so intimidating. And people think, because I talk for a living and because of what I do, that I would be super, super confident. But actually, I was the total opposite in those situations. And I would, sometimes I just wouldn't know what to say, because I think, oh God, I might sound a bit stupid if I say that. And you overanalyze everything. And then what I began to learn was that actually just treat it as if you're having a conversation with a friend, admittedly a friend that you haven't met before, but just be you. Because if they don't like you, then they're not for you. Mm-hmm.
Completely. Oh my gosh, there's so much I want to say in response to that. One of the things is that I always say to clients, like, if you're really nervous on a date, you are allowed to say, God, I'm feeling really nervous. And guess what? That really breaks the tension. It's so simple. The worst thing you can do is, you know, like bluff your way through and pretend you're not nervous when you are. Like if you just own it and just like, oh, I'm feeling really nervous and flustered.
That's almost endearing, isn't it?
Yeah.
If a guy said that to me, I would be like, oh, that's actually quite endearing. Like you're being honest and you're being in touch with your feelings rather than somebody that's, you know, full of bravado. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. Well, vulnerability, as Brené Brown talks about so eloquently, like you cannot have intimacy and connection without vulnerability. And so the irony is that in the Instagram culture that we live in today, everyone is being so like, got to impress, best foot forward, all of this shit. And you might impress someone, they might even fancy you, but they're not, you cannot fall in love with someone's like persona, not real love. No. Like it's, you've got, it's the vulnerability. That's the thing. It's like actually it's our weaknesses, the areas that we struggle, that are the key to connection. They really are. And you know, I'm so passionate about people realizing that it's easier than you think. I mean, it's scary to be vulnerable, but like the minute you do it, it's like a massive weight off. And if the other person goes weird at you, because that's the fear, is you think, oh, if I share that, I'm going to be rejected in some way. But if they do that, for me, it's like, mate, like you've disqualified yourself, like that you've made it really easy for me. Because if someone can't be supportive and compassionate in that moment, like how are they going to be in a relationship? Like that tells you everything that you need to know.
Yeah. I mean, there was one day actually that I went on and I could see the guy was really nervous. I was very casual about it because I was just like, oh, you know, I'll just pop along and, you know, I've been on a few dates by this point. And he was really nervous and he was actually shaking and he was only drinking a glass of water and he was shaking. And I said, are you okay? I said, you're shaking. And he was like, oh, am I? And I was like, yeah, just, you know, is everything all right? And he just went, oh, I just feel quite intimidated because I Googled you before you came. And I was like, oh God, you must have found some really awful things. And actually, from that point on, I was able to put him at ease. Oh my God, there's somebody at my door.
Don't worry. You can go and answer it if you need to go and answer
really
it.
Really quickly. Sorry.
That's all right. I'm just going to chat. This happens all the time. So what I want to say there is, for anyone listening, well, hopefully you are listening, hence why you're here. So when Gemma was talking about not like hopping from relationship to relationship, if you know me, you know that that was absolutely my story. And we'll call it Olympic ringing, which sounds absolutely filthy, doesn't it? But it's, think about the Olympic rings. Are there five of them? They all sort of loop together. So that was me like overlapping. And then she said how she realized, like, I think it was at the age of 39, she needed to be on her own. And it took me a long time to realize that after a breakup, you know what? The best thing to do is not to jump into bed with someone else. It's to spend some time with yourself healing. I was just doing some excellent filling there, talking about... Don't worry. No, but I was just saying how I very much like you, used to jump from relationship to relationship. And I never had a gap in between because I was so scared to be on my own. Like I needed that constant validation. But you were saying, had you already had your kids when you came out the breakup and you realized you needed time? Or was that like on
your own? Yeah. I'd already had the kids. And actually, I think that's probably why I really felt like I needed that time on my own, because I was like, you know what? I don't need somebody. I can support myself. I've got two children. I don't have a biological clock ticking. And, you know, I need to focus on these small people that I birthed and make sure that they feel protected and safe, because obviously they'd had a huge amount of disruption with me leaving their dad. And, you know, we all left the family home. He stayed there, we left. So it was about making sure they were okay. And they had to be my sort of prime, you know, concern and prime, focus.
Yeah. See, that sounds so hard. And I want to talk about this a bit because I get a lot of questions from or DMs from women who are single and who have single mums who have kids. And number one, they really often believe that stops them from, that will stop them or has stopped them from meeting someone new, because they get into the narrative like, oh, no one's going to want me because I've got kids, which is not true. I'm like, I can give you so many examples of women who have kids from another relationship or marriage and who are now happily with someone else. Like, but it's the story that you tell yourself. So was that something you ever worried about, or did you just not really think about that?
No, I didn't really think about that. Although there was a situation with somebody that I'd been on like two or three dates with, and he basically tried to insinuate to me that I was lucky that he was into me, because, you know, his mates were like, oh, what are you doing? She's got two young kids. And it was almost like that was actually the moment where I was like, I'm not gonna see you again.
No.
If you're using that, it was almost a bit like, a little bit gaslighty in a way. It's just insinuating that, you know, no one else will really like me, so better take it here. And I just thought, oh, no. And actually, you know, my kids, I'm lucky in a way because they're with their dad once a week and every other weekend. And so I do have that free time to, you know, be just me, which I think a lot of people in relationships, they don't have that luxury. Like I always said, I felt more lonely in the relationship than I did when I came out, because, you know, when I was in the relationship and I had the kids all of the time, it was very full on, and a lot of it was on me. Mm-hmm. And then when I came out, it was like all of a sudden, I've got time to be me and do things that I like when they're with their dad and their grandparents. And that was quite amazing.
I mean, that talk about like it's narrative, isn't it? Like, and actually I've heard a few friends say that now. And I definitely am like, you know what? You can look at this as a negative, or you can look at it as a positive. And I think that's huge, because one of the other main things I hear from mums, single or not single, like that really, like, just how overwhelming it can be and how much time you don't have with yourself. And as someone, you know, I really like spending time on my own. I love spending time with my husband as well. But that's one of, I mean, I'm 38 now, and we got married 2 years ago, constantly, are you going to have kids? When are you going to have kids? All of this. And I'm just,
oh no, but that's so annoying.
Oh God, I'm just like, listen, I've got a dog, and that's quite, and he's a little shit. I love him.
That's your fur baby.
He is, we basically treat him like a child. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But well, I mean, go on.
No, I was going to say, if you have a dog, then, you know, that's really good training, because I think it's easier to get childcare than it is dog care sometimes.
So no, we are so lucky, because our neighbour is obsessed with him. And so,
oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, I swear to God, I manifested you, because that was my big fear, because I love my freedom is my biggest value, hence the fear of having kids. Yeah. And even getting the dog, I was like, I love dogs and I love him, but I was like, I need to be able to, like, you know, have freedom when I need it. And she's just like, oh, she wants to have him all the time, which is just great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'd be the best mum, though, because I'd be like, right, you can go to the neighbours.
Well, you never know. Neither of mine were planned. Like, I'm thankful for them every day. I love them. I adore them. But we didn't ever sit down and go, right, now's the time.
Mm.
They just appear.
Mm-hmm.
As they do.
So I think another question that I have that links to all of this is, do you believe it's possible for women to have it all? It's the cliche question. I can't stand it, and yet I still want to know.
I believe that if you juggle and you time manage, you can have snippets. I mean, you can't have it all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's virtually impossible. But what you can do is, you know, I mean, for me, for example, like, my fitness is something that's a non-negotiable, because I need to do it for my head, for my, you know, for my sanity. Mm-hmm. And so I'll book that in as a meeting. Seeing friends, you know, I'll always make sure I've got time to see friends when the kids are with their dad. And I like to travel, you know, when we're splitting up the school holidays, for example, I'll take them away, but then I'll also go away on my own or with friends or my sister or whatever. And with work as well, I just try and do as much as I can when they're not away. So, but by my experience, I can say yes, like, to a degree. There are sacrifices that you have to make along the way, and you can't have it all of the time. You know, if there's an event that I got invited to or to DJ at, but I couldn't get childcare, then, you know, that's checkmate. You know, you're stuck. But if you plan, and if you're driven, and if it's something you really want, then I believe that you can have most of the things most of the time.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I sometimes think, like, have it all. Like, what does that
What does that mean?
You know, what is all? Like, what is all? I think, you know, I think when people say it, they're talking about having kids, having the partner, having the big career, having, you know, just like a very, very full life. And I agree with you. I think, you know, I've seen my friends describe, who one would describe on the outside as looking like they have it all, but they also have all the anxiety because it's like, it's, you know, it's a lot to juggle. Like, I remember asking you when we met, I was like, how do you do it? Like, you know, you've got a lot of things going on. And I think that's it. And there's kind of a lot of pressure. I think there's a lot of pressure. You know, my friends who are stay-at-home mums, I don't even like saying that because I think there's so much stigma around it. I'm like, that is the hardest job of all. Like, I really think that that's such a hard job. And I think it's like, in so many ways, it's so thankless. And I'm like, you know, mums are like truly phenomenal. Like, more and more of my friends are becoming them. And I'm like, I don't know how you do it. I really don't know.
Well, when I had my first child, and I decided to set up a sportswear company when she was about 9 weeks old. And but for me, it was almost like I'm going out of the house and going to these meetings for a break.
Yeah.
which sounds really awful, but I don't think, and full respect to you know, the mums that do or the carers that do, but I couldn't have done that full-time, you know, stay at home mum. I was lucky that I could sort of juggle it a bit with grandparents, and that gave me the freedom to be able to continue working, because I was, you know, I was back doing voiceovers after 2 weeks.
Wow.
So going into town, and you know, I've just been lucky in that respect. But it is hard, like being a stay-at-home mum.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
Yeah. I've stayed with friends, and actually my brother-in-law and his girlfriend have recently had a gorgeous little girl. And so I'm an auntie, which, by the way, is my fate. I'm like, this is all for me. This is me having it all, is being an auntie. And they're actually moving really near us. So I'm like, over the moon. I'm so excited to like sit and teach her ukulele and like all sorts of things. And then, you know, hand her back when it's bedtime.
Exactly. What I was going to say as well, don't get me wrong, I do get anxiety a lot. You know, I think that's just in this day and age, you know, so I'm not sort of saying like, oh, I've got it all sorted. I really haven't. There are many times when I'll just shut myself in the bathroom and just go, because it all just gets on top a little bit. But, you know, I think it's important to be honest about that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So, okay, like going back, so you came out of the relationship and you started a sportswear brand 9 weeks in. At what point did you start dating? And like, given that you'd been in a 10-year relationship and before that you hadn't really dated much, you kind of gone from relationship to relationship like myself. Like, what surprised you about the world of modern dating when you entered it?
I mean, goodness, anyone has been on dating apps, you all know there's some very special people out there. And yeah, I was surprised about how people can be, actually, with, you know, and how forward people can be with somebody sometimes that they've never even met. Sometimes this would just be at the, you know, messaging phase. And some of the things that people would say and suggest, and I would be like, oh, God, very sheltered life. What's this? and then when you go on dates, like, oh, you don't look like your picture. that was a common one. I did learn how to sort of, you know, like, read people a little bit better. I think at the start when I first started, I was like, I'm just not going to hold any judgment. I'm just going to, you know, go and, you know, be easy to find and whatever. But there's been some special moments, let's say that.
So what do you think is a really important skill set when it comes to modern dating that not many people kind of either realise or have nailed down?
Talk as much as you can before you meet them. But also don't dilly-dally too much with the messaging. Try and arrange in that first week of talking, if you can, to have the date, because then you're going to know if you're wasting your time or not. Because I think when you meet in person, it's so different. And you can go on body language as well as, you know, what they're saying to you verbally. You know, is it 90% of communication is done through body language? So that's a massive thing, I think. You know, read the body language and see how they're acting towards you. Are they closed off? Do you think that they're sort of, are they engaging with you? Are they looking at you? Are they talking about themselves constantly? Are they asking questions about you? You know, I think they're all things that you sort of want to be looking out for and, you know, thinking, is this going to be a good partner?
Yeah. Well, you know what you've said there that I think a lot of people, we can be so like, because when we're insecure and we're nervous, all the focus is on ourselves. Do they like me? How am I coming across? All of that. But everything you've just said is actually what I teach. I'm like, it comes back to Meisner, like for the acting classes I did, the acting technique is like, put your attention on the other person.
Yeah.
And it actually takes away a lot of that anxiety. And yeah. I always say it's like, notice the people that you are naturally relaxed with. Because you know when people say, just be yourself, I find that really unhelpful. I get the idea, but it's like, if you're, I believe you either can be yourself or you can't. Like, because with some people, you know, like for example, when I met you, because I think it's the same as like relationships, friendships with women as it is like romantic for me. I know there's some women I can meet and I go into performance mode, almost like I'm on a date, because for whatever reason, it's obviously like there's a wound, there's stuff there that reminds me of something, and it triggers insecurity. It's nothing to do with that person. Well, it is, but it's not their fault. It's just they remind me of someone or something.
Yeah.
And I say that with dating. It's like, just notice the people who you naturally feel relaxed with and what the problem is. Because when I met my husband, I felt so relaxed with him. But I said to my friends, he will never be my boyfriend. Absolutely not. Because I was not used to it feeling so easy. Like I was used to that instant chemistry and that sort of like that charge. We did have the chemistry, but I felt very safe with him. And I did not associate safety and romance. Like for me, romance was like emotion. They're a bit dangerous. They're a bit bad.
Yeah.
It's hot, cold. I don't know if they're into me. It's a challenge because particularly as high achievers, and I can verify this from coaching so many over the years, like we love a challenge. Because then it makes the victory of like winning the other person over, like it feels like you've really achieved something. So when this other person, like my husband was so like, you're great, I'm into you, I want to be with you. And I was like, where's the challenge there? But actually now I'm like, that's why we've got such a good partnership, because there was no game playing.
And that's the other thing, isn't it? I'm not into this whole like game playing thing. So if somebody, you know, I remember when I first started dating and people would be like, don't message straight away. And I'm like, well, why? Because it's just, you know, I'm just responding to a message. And actually, if I don't respond straight away, I'll probably forget and it will just slide down amongst a load of other messages. So I'm quite reactive. I don't do that game playing thing. Because again, if somebody is not going to find that attractive in you, like, oh, you know, they're not being aloof enough, then it's like, well, again, that's not the person for you.
You know, this makes me think of some of the best advice I've ever been given around dating was don't play hard to get, be hard to get. So don't play games. But in terms of being hard to get is like, this is what I talk about a lot in my program, Love for Leaders, is like that discernment of like, know your worth, know your standards, know what you will and won't accept. I feel like you naturally do this very well. I felt that the minute I met you, I was like, she knows who she is and she won't suffer fools gladly. Like certainly, I just feel like you naturally have that energy about you. And I think that's where a lot of women, certainly the ones that I coach, really struggle, because they struggle with the discernment piece. And it's almost like they'll accept any crumbs of attention from any dickhead because they don't really see their value. And then they don't know, like they don't speak up and say when there's a problem. And then there's like passive aggression, all of this just become, it. You know, understandably, we women have not like been allowed to speak our mind, you know, for very long at all. So of course, we're not actually very practiced in it. And there's so much judgments around it, you know, women being direct and transparent and owning what it is they want. But the thing is, if you don't state it, if you're not clear about it.
Well, that's the thing. And I've had many awkward conversations. And actually, my ex-boyfriend said, you know, sometimes you can just be a little bit too honest. And I'm like, it's not that I'm too honest. It's just that if you've annoyed me, I'm going to tell you, and you don't have to say it in a horrible way, but I also don't want to say it in a passive aggressive way and get narky, because yeah. that's when things start to build up, and then you become resentful to one another. And you know, I think it's easier if you are considered a high achiever to know your worth and to back yourself. But that's the tricky thing, isn't it? Because you've got everything you need. And so anyone that comes into your life needs to elevate it for you. It's, you know, if I look back to 10 years ago when I didn't have, you know, what I have now, like I was a completely different person and I was very insecure. Mm-hmm. So having the children and working hard in my career has given me that confidence with relationships.
Do you know, it's interesting because that makes so much sense. And yet I can't tell you how many women I've coached who are such high achievers, like really, really high achieving, ridiculous. And yet when it comes to their love life, it's like they, none of that confidence transfers.
Really?
None of it. No. And it's almost like it kind of like the massive gap between how confident and successful they feel in their career and how crap they feel in their love life, it almost makes it worse. You know, I think it comes from all sorts of stories. You know, everyone's got a different context, but the stories of men are intimidated by successful women
true.
Yeah, and so that can become a real thing. And what I can see is that they then put their armor up because they're used, like, basically they're used to being very much in that masculine energy, in that masculine role in work, which is great. And then in our love life, it's like, The key, as I said earlier, is like that connection and intimacy, and in order to have that, you have to be able to be vulnerable. And that can be, if you're not used to being in that space of vulnerability in your work life, then you're just not very practiced in it. So often that's why I say to them, is like the work, and we do it in the program, but the work that we do is so focused around like the softening, because it's like you've got, your strength is great, you've got that. But you now have to, like, it's like you've got to bring over that strength and those boundaries and that self-respect you have in work. You need that in your love life, but you also need, at the same time, you need that softness and that openness. And it's hard to have that when you've been burned and rejected and or like cheated on, and you know, and it's hard to trust people.
I get that, and it is hard to show vulnerability, and I've been cheated on years ago, and it's a horrible thing, and it really, really knocks your confidence. I think it's actually one of the worst things that people can do to you in terms of relationships. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, what I will say is that I love love, and it's, you know, when you're with somebody and things are great, then why not show that vulnerability? Because, you know, it's about being in the moment, isn't it? And there's that saying, it's better to loved and lost than never loved at all. And just, you know, because if it doesn't work out because you're not showing vulnerability, then, you know, you're cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I was going to ask you, you've kind of already spoken into this a bit, but I want to hear if there's anything else. Like, what would you say your strengths and weaknesses are when it comes to dating and relationships?
Oh, goodness. Strengths and weaknesses. Well, I think probably my weaknesses is actually something a friend said to me the other day, because, you know, I've been on a date and I wasn't sort of digging the person, but the person was apparently digging me and thought that we had this amazing connection. And I told them, no, I didn't feel that. And my friend said, the thing with you, Gemma, is that everyone's going to feel like they have a connection with you because you just make everybody feel at ease and you just talk and chat to everybody. Like, you're so friendly. So everyone's going to think they have a connection with you. So she was like, this is going to be your downfall. So, I mean, I don't know if that's a bad thing or not.
Well, but I'm like, I'm just sitting here thinking, oh my God, is our connection not real? I thought it was special.
Me and you are so special. I don't know. I'm trying to think of, yeah, it's just something I'm not really sure.
I hear that. It's like, it's both a strength and potentially a weakness because, yeah. And I do definitely, that is a superpower you have. You do make people feel very like they can relax and be themselves with you. So I could see how that could potentially be challenging for a poor man who just you don't feel the same way about. And they're like, I thought we were like deeply in love. I was about to buy your engagement ring. So on that note, how do you know if someone's a good match for you?
I don't know if you do, do you? I think you just trust your instinct and trust your gut. I mean, there's been times where I've sat there looking at the guy thinking, God, you're so hot, but God, you're so wrong for me.
Oh, I think
because
we've
all... they just give off big player energy.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, you're hot, but you're just going to, yeah, you're not going to be good for me. And you can just sense it a mile off. And yeah. Then, you know, my last relationship, that was actually a real slow burn. We dated a few times and there wasn't like this kind of instant like rah. But I sort of gradually fell in love with him because it was a very different dynamic. I just think you have to go on how somebody makes you feel. And if they're making you feel good and not insecure, then that's always a good sign. Mm-hmm. And if you just got to vibe with somebody. And I just think there's no particular thing that you can look out for because everyone's got their different sort of preferences, haven't they? And nobody's the same. But I just think always trust your gut because your gut knows.
It does indeed. And I think you're right. Like, ultimately, even when you've done a lot of work on yourself, I have, like, part of what I teach is radical surrender, because the best acting advice I ever got, which actually I realize is really good life advice, was from an acting teacher who said, do the work and then leave it in the wings. So do your due diligence, as they say in the corporate world.
Yeah.
Like, do what you need to do. Be clear on the type of, like, what are your values? What kind of partner you want to attract? What your pitfalls have been in past relationships, all of that jazz. But ultimately, you've just got to go, like we've said earlier, like, you've got to go and be present in the moment and surrender to it and just see what happens. But that's such an important part, is being clear and honest and direct with the other person, which can be really hard if you're not practiced in doing that. And something else you said that was really great, and I'm so for the slow burn, which feels so weird coming out my mouth, because I was always like, just about the intensity. I've met a lot of lovers on the dance floor. I can't tell you how many boyfriends I've met on the dance floor, and, you know, gone from 0 to 1,000 in like 5 seconds in like the space of David Bowie song.
Which is great if that's what you want. If you want something temporary, then, you know, that has its time and place too. Mm-hmm. But I think the slow burn thing was something that I wasn't used to. And actually, you know, for quite a while, we did have a really lovely relationship. I just think sometimes, you know, maybe, you know, you have a reason, a season or a lifetime. And there are some people that will be in my life forever because, you know, we still have a good friendship now, you know, and we were together for 5 years, you know, years ago. And, you know, the father of my children will always be in my life because he's the father of my children. And then there's been people that, you know, just sort of popped up and it hasn't worked out romantically, but we've ended up being great friends again. And it's just, you know, or they've ended up being like a really good work connection, or something weird has happened, or, you know, they've popped up later on down the line and suggested me for something. And it's, you know, people come into your life for different reasons. And I think just don't sweat it.
That's such good advice. That's almost like a good place to wrap up, but we're not quite finished. But I'm just going to, before I ask you my final few questions in the lightning round, just a quick heads up for our listeners. In the show notes, we have got a link to an amazing free resource, which is called the Love for Leaders Scorecard. And this is kind of a lot of what we've been talking today, really. So it uncovers your strengths and weaknesses around dating and relationships, and it gives you bespoke tips and tools to get the relationship you desire faster. It's really bloody good. People love it. It's quite weird seeing like your percentages of like the different areas of your dating life. You're like, oh, and everyone's like, God, it's worryingly accurate.
Oh my God, I need to try this.
Yeah, you need to do it. I'll send you it.
Send it to me.
Yeah, you can also get it on my Instagram. My Instagram link, it's there too. And also in the show notes, we're going to pop a link to my flagship program, Love for Leaders. And you can book, you can find out all about that there. And you can book a free consultation on that page too. Okay. So with that all said and done, final lightning round questions. So you just have to answer super quick. Don't overthink it, which I think you're quite good at doing.
Like bolt by name, bolt by nature.
I was going to say, is that your actual name? Because that's a mess. Do you get asked that a lot? I get asked that every day.
Yeah, I do. And the weird thing is, when I was at school, I used to say to my dad, it's really awful, but I can't wait to get married because I hate the surname Bolt. And I used to hate it growing up. And now I'm like, I'm never going to get married. And even if I do get married, I'm going to keep my name.
Yeah, I've kept my surname mainly out of laziness, and because it's my business name, I just can't be asked. But I actually, apparently on my wedding certificate, I did put, I don't know what I am legally. I should probably look into that. I felt the same with my first name. Like, I was like, oh God, because I used to get this all the time when I was growing up. Oh, you're Persia. Oh God, what now? What have I done now?
I love that name though. It's so classic.
You know, funny story. This, I know we're getting distracted from the lightning round, but this is a funny story I don't think I've told on here. So my mum and dad are, they're quite out there. They're big personalities and they wanted certainly my mum wanted an interesting name. So I was going to be Persia, India, Sydney, Paris, or get ready for it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Flanagan.
Like, what?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, all of them are lovely. And then the last one, it's like, why?
I think I would have had a very different life if I'd been called
that. Oh, that was just going to be one big long name.
But do you know what is funny? Because I was like, right, I'm going to have to, my husband's surname is Gould. So I'm like, I've got to double barrel my name. So this is technically my whole name, because I actually think that is what we did on the marriage certificate for me. So my full name is Persia Arabella Lawson Gould. I sound like I own sort of, you know, a lot of land.
Yeah, like you sound like you own, like, you know, most of, you know, Bond Street or something. And like, you know, Selfridges, and you're the heir to, you know, part of Tottenham Court Road as well.
I know, Tottenham Court Road.
So that's actually really bad, isn't it? Who wants Tottenham Court Road? Keep going the other way. Hyde Park.
Yeah, Hyde Park, darling, sweetie. Hyde Park, we're on Knightsbridge, sure.
We go around the Monopoly board now.
Okay, right. Back to the lightning round. Okay, are you ready for the first question? Okay. What love life advice would you give to 15-year-old Gemma Bolt?
Oh, God, don't have a love life at 15. Just, like, go and hang out with your friends. Do what you need to do. Don't waste your time down ice tracks, the ice skating rink, doing pair skating with the guy that's not really into you. And just, you know, focus on getting good grades, because 15-year-old Gemma did not do that.
Okay, so what is, this is going to be an interesting one. What's one thing people may be surprised to know about you?
Surprised. When I've been on a night out, I may have had a few margaritas. I do a Tina Turner impression that does kind of wow people.
Does it? Can you do it now?
No.
You can't.
Oh my God, I can't. It's purely alcohol fueled. But you will see it one day.
I'm going to come to a Discolicious and you're going to have to do it on the microphone.
Yeah. Well, I do actually play a few Tina Turner remixes, so yeah.
No, I actually, my husband Joe took me to see the Tina Turner musical in January 1st.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good. I highly recommend anyone go and see it. It's phenomenal. Yeah. It's really great.
The lead is incredible.
Okay, so before the final question, where can people find out more about your work, and is there anything significant that you've got coming up that you'd like to mention?
Oh, so we've got our Discolicious website, which has just been launched, and Discolicious has got three S's in it. I think people usually, when they're sort of searching, that they only put the two S's in and then it comes up with some cafe. So make sure you put the three S's in Discolicious. And everything is on there, all our up and coming gigs. That's where you can get tickets to our events. We've got a roller Discolicious coming up in Brighton at the I360. That's on the May Bank holiday. And we've got a big Pride event coming up on the 29th of June in London. Got events in August. We've got our Ibiza events. And Instagram, Discolicious, and me, Gemma Bolt, with a J.
I will pop all of those links in the show notes. Amazing. I can't wait to come. I cannot wait to come and dance at Discolicious.
Yay. I can't wait to come to your festival.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make you play, so.
Fine. Yes. Blow my key.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so final question, Gemma Bolt. I think you're someone I'm always going to have to say your full name, by the way.
My school friends do that, yeah. And bearing in mind, we've known each other since we were like 10. They always say Gemma Bolt, and they still do it now. And I'm like, why do you still do that? And they're like, because we always did it at school, and so we can't stop now. Fine.
I love it. Okay, so Gemma Bolt, what is your number one piece of advice for any single woman listening to this episode who is killing it in her career but is really struggling in her love life? What would you say to her?
I would say don't sweat it. You know, if you're killing it professionally, then, you know, the love life will come. If you're out and you're sociable, and, you know, I think that's probably the main thing, actually, is to make sure that you've got time to be sociable. You know, go out with friends, go out with family, and you never know, you might cross your path. Because if you sit inside, you're not going to meet anyone, are you?
Well, exactly. Go to a disco delicious event. Listen, I just, like I said, always all about meeting people on the dance floor. Like, it's such a great way to...
That can be the tagline. Come to Discolicious and you'll meet the love of your life.
You never know. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There you go. Well, listen, you have been a fabulous guest. I cannot wait for everyone to hear this. I cannot wait to come to your event and for everyone listening to come and have a good old boogie at Discolicious. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Persia. Lovely to chat to you.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this episode served you and gave some practical insights and strategies around the next steps in transforming your love life from the inside out. Do come and let me know over on Instagram what resonated for you the most and why. I am @PersiaLawson. And if you want more tips and tools on how to become a vibrational match for the powerful, committed relationship that you deserve, check out my book, Love is Coming, as well as my programs and coaching containers over at PersiaLawson.com. This website is also linked in this episode's show notes. And if you got value from this episode, I'd be so grateful if you'd like, subscribe, share, and or leave a quick review. This helps the podcast rank higher so it can reach other women who want or need the support. And to have your question answered, send it over to podcast@persialawson.com and we'll get to it ASAP. Until next time, I want you to remember that love is coming for you. But in the meantime, it's your responsibility to stop looking outside of yourself for the partner you want to get and start looking inside of yourself for the partner you want to be.